Hi, this is Peter Bart.
And Mike Fleming.
And this is the Bart Fleming Podcast. So, Mike, the Globes are now past us, and once again, there's this debate about whether or not it's a good show and legitimate award show. And I was amused that the Wall Street Journal runs a piece yesterday which said, look, with all the arguments about the Globe, let's face this reality. It's more fun than the Oscars. And in many cases, the winners are more interesting and certainly more widely acknowledged by the public. I mean, the Globes this year honored Roma, Bohemian Rhapsody, and The Green Book. Now, say what you will about those choices. In point of fact, they're original movies. They weren't reboots or remakes or sequels or prequels. There were films that, and this is typical of the Golden Globes choices, that found very wide audiences out there and wide acceptance around the world. At the same time, the discussions and the controversies about the Globe hosts, sure, they were awkward, there were glitches, there were mistakes, but you know, Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg were fun to watch, with all their glitches. And the fact that the Oscars can't even anoint a host as yet, and it's getting late, I think illustrates the fact that in a paradoxical way, the Oscars are confounded by the Globes and their success, their rating successes. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I think that everything you said, except I'm going to be take the opposite position on. I thought the Globes was just dreadful. Again, and the problem I have with the winners is you don't really have a sense as to how much of that is based on merit or how much of that is based on which film company spent the most. Did something lavish with these 93 anonymous journalist voters to bolster their position. It's just it's a big hype fest, and I think there's a lot of questions as to how valid it is. I thought the hosts were really kind of benign and dull. I thought that, for instance, Amy Poehler and Maya Rudolph reenacting the Oscar, you know, he's one of the producers of the Oscars, the director, what is it, Glenn Weiss, his proposal, I thought was just stilted and awkward and just mind-numbingly, just like, what are you doing? I felt the same way about when they sent people out to give flu shots to the crowd. I just thought it was just bizarre. And I understand that that a lot of the material that they prepared, maybe as much as 40%, they never got to do it because the show ran so long. And I've been told, actually, that, you know, because some people who win have to come so far to make it on the stage, that even like Oscars, that whole thing about people hugging each other and when sauntering to the stage, in total, you can lose 20 minutes. That can take 20 minutes, 20 whole minutes. And so I think, you know, I think there's the hostless Oscars, and I believe it will be hostless. I think when I looked at those hosts of the Golden Globes, I don't think you lose anything by not having a host. I think that if they can find a way to speed it up and get people on the stage and get them off the stage, I think Gil Cates a few years ago had this idea where they were going to basically walk out and hand people their awards in their seats and then put a microphone in front of their face and let them speak a little. That would certainly help. But any way that you can basically make this thing go further and not have people like myself saying, praying for death, I think is a good thing.
Well, Mike, I think that the Globe Show has been around for, a couple of generations now. And there have long been arguments about the fact that the people who pick the awards are these 90 people who write for papers around the world. They by and large, earn their living as journalists, writing mostly personality pieces for papers overseas.
Maybe,
and sure,
but
they're,
Peter,
they're entertained.
But one thing, Peter, the Academy Academy Awards, as you know, because you're a voter, they're basically given out by peers. These are people who know what they're doing. They know the craft. If somebody wins best editor, basically the advocates for that are people who actually know what you would do in an editing room. That is so not the case with the Golden Globes. I don't think the Golden Globes are anything more than like the People's Choice or anyone who has an opinion of the best films of the year. I just don't think it really, I just think that it's the fact that it's gotten to be such a big hype machine, and Hollywood made it that way. But I just think that, I was left cold by the broadcast, and I must say that it left me sitting there thinking, what right do these 93 journalists that are not prominent and that you and I probably have never even heard of to basically give out awards and actually have a say in the momentum of pictures in Oscar season?
I think that's a point of view that was interesting when it was first articulated 40 years ago. But the Globes has been with us forever. They're simply part of the scene. And you can argue endlessly about the credentials of the voters. The point of fact that the show is a big hit, that the ratings have validated it in a way. People like it. And even the you're right, there's a lot of time wasted by people getting up and kissing everyone around them and so forth. And then they've had a few drinks, so their walk to the stage is not always precise. But I would argue that there's a sort of entertainment value in that. You're part of this bizarre dinner party. I've been to several Globe dinners, and let me tell you this. They're a lot more fun to attend as a social event. They're a lot more fun to attend than the Oscar ceremony. And if by making the Oscars militaristic, by racing it along and jamming mics into people's faces, that ain't going to help, really. I think what would help, of course, if a lot of these categories, short subjects, for example, are simply abandoned, which the Globes does. And again, you have to admit that there are a lot of things that the Golden Globes, with all their gaucheness and mistakes, that is bold and clever. There'd be tremendous opposition within the Academy, of which I've been a member for decades, if you eliminate some of these categories. On the other hand, it would sure speed up the show. But here, Mike, I'd like your opinion of this. The whole arena of political correctness, which is haunting the selection of an Oscar host, given the fact that Kevin Hart has suddenly became damaged good because of old social media posts. To me, the disease of political correctness is fascinating because it unites both the right and the left. Like Peggy Noonan, for example, a Republican stalwart, former presidential aide, she writes a column for the Wall Street Journal, vented this week that political correctness is the enemy of art, that the trend toward self-censorship or organized censorship amounts to an assassination of creativity. And I think we're seeing this in lots of areas, the Oscar situation being the newest.
Well, I think that this sort of rekindling of Kevin Hart, and then you looked at all these pieces, and people are basically turned it into a referendum on Kevin Hart. And look, I saw those homophobic tweets that he delivered, and I thought they were repugnant. Frankly, they were a long time ago, and I don't know what's in this guy's heart or not. But I just think that, what are we talking about? He was being asked to MC a television broadcast, and suddenly you have people dissecting all of his comedy routines and what he said about women and what he said about gay people. And I see this happening all the time. Whenever Louis C.K. gets on stage, his whole routine is being put under a microscope. I just think it is getting kind of at a level where it's just enough.
Let me give you an example. You know, Peggy Noonan took a look at a Randy Newman album, Good Old Boys, from dating back to 1974. And in it, there's songs like Redneck and so forth. Now, that in that album, brilliant album, it put forth a whole variety of epithets that would cause moral outrage today. So if you go back and review old movies, old TV shows, old tweets, and even old lyrics, you know, you look at it by the standards of today, and there's a lot that's repugnant. And couldn't a case be made for not going back and re-reviewing the past and not trying to comment? See, what I think is missing is an understanding that a lot has changed in public taste and morality over the last generation.
Yeah, but Peter, also, you have to remember, now this whole Me Too thing came on after the Harvey Weinstein allegations were made by the New York Times and the New Yorker. And then a succession of executives were toppled. And every time we see that happen, just when you think this has run out of steam, you see someone like Les Moonves be exposed as just as bad as any of these people in the way he behaved towards women. But the thing is, now those lines have become blurred. And so you look at these stories kind of basically breathlessly saying that this person has been put on the shelf momentarily while an investigation is being weighed about how they yelled at people or something like that. And, you know, people in Hollywood have been yelling at each other and yelling at underlings forever. People have been treated badly coming up in the ranks. Some would call it hazing. It happens at all the agencies. I've heard people tell me stories about how their first job was walking a producer's pet pig. So I guess the question is, how far are we taking this? I think it's going to continue because what we have are journalists who maybe think that they're helping the greater good by taking these people down, even if the so-called crime gets less and less. And then you have these corporations that are so scared of basically standing up and saying, you know what? Yeah, this isn't so great, but we're going to stand by this person. None of these corporations want to seem insensitive. And so all this stuff is being kind of exacerbated. And then some people out there are weaponizing this stuff. So they'll go back and grab Kevin Hart's tweets or James Gunn's tweets from long ago, which were meant satirically. There's no evidence that he acted this way. And basically, people are being strung up by their words because of this perfect storm of corporate sensitivity and ambition to take the Me Too thing further and further.
Well, on that subject, it's very interesting that a lot of writers now are rebelling against the contracts that have been submitted to them by magazine publishers and book publishers. Many consider to be onerous stipulations in these deals. The deals provide that companies can cancel a book or a magazine deal if past or future misconduct by the author is, quote, inconsistent with the author's reputation at the time the agreement was executed, or public condemnation comes to light. Now, what this basically means is that if some pressure group or some blogger challenges an opinion, past or present, one that causes the writer to become a subject of a public dispute, then a publisher can simply call off the deal retroactively. And I think that this basically is a distortion of the old morality clauses that were imposed by Hollywood and in sports. But those clauses were aimed at protecting distributors from the actions of self-destructive stars who were arrested for drug use or for sexual misconduct. And I have, as in my studio days, have exercised those morality clauses. I remember on one set, set coming on the star of a particular movie who was not only drinking excessively, but was delaying the schedule enormously. And when I pointed out that he was behaving badly, he took out a gun and waved it at me. Now, I went through the morality clauses. I went through insurance issues. I told him in no uncertain terms that his career is going to be over, and put away the damn gun and shape up. Now, that's one area, but that's so different from someone, and this is a little Kevin Hardy, from a company saying, boy, this person's may become a little controversial because a story appeared in the paper about him, and therefore all the deals that we made with him are canceled. Don't you find that a little scary, Mike?
Well, I do, but you know what? It's part of this whole slippery slope, and we haven't really established the ground rules, and I can certainly sympathize with a corporation which is investing money in acquiring a book and then having to put up the money to promote it and to basically base its revenue expectations around that book and then have it all blow up in their face because of some controversy. I can understand them wanting to protect themselves. Let's face it. Look in the case of like with Louis C.K. when he had a feature film, and that blew up when those revelations came out about how he was behaving in the company of women writers under his employ. And it was appalling behavior. And Morgan Spurlock, he has his the equivalent of the Jerry Maguire mission statement where he has turmoil and he writes this whole thing talking about how he hasn't been a good person. And suddenly his documentary is blown to smithereens and his company is basically struggling to hang on. I think the results of these kind of things are so precipitous and so sudden and abrupt. I can't really blame corporations or book publishers from wanting to at least protect themselves somewhat. And maybe this will keep people in line. But a lot of this, I think, Peter, has to do with vetting things more carefully. I mean, we go back to Kevin Hart, and it's too bad that the Oscars didn't anticipate this. They could have before Kevin Hart. Now, Deadline broke the story that Kevin was getting the job, and maybe we rushed that process. But but this could have been dealt with. He could have been asked in advance to say something apologetic. When he was announced, there was a way to deal with this thing. And I think from now on, no matter where you are, or what job you're taking, if you're getting a job as a journalist or if you're hosting an award show, people have to vet your social media records all the way back to the beginning. And maybe you want to scrub things that come off stupidly. It's just a slippery slope, but I can understand a corporation wanting to protect itself.
I can't believe that I hear you defending corporations. I go back to my Republican friend, Peggy Noonan, who said, and I repeat it, the trend toward either self-censorship or organized censorship amounts to an assassination of creativity. I think we should remember that concept.
But wait, but Peter, let's just stretch this a little bit. I agree
what
with
you. Want the
but
last word? God, yeah.
No. Let's look at Eddie Murphy. Now, Eddie Murphy would be a perfect Oscar host. But if you go back into the comedy routines that made Eddie such a huge star, the best stand-up comic that we've ever seen of his generation, there are a lot of things in there that if you played them right now, they would seem homophobic and unacceptable. Now, does that mean that Eddie Murphy, if he wants to, should not be allowed to host the Academy Awards? This is the problem. Everything is now retroactive, and it's like we're in the second act of the Crucible, and anything that you've done in the past, you hope it gets hidden, or it's going to be trotted out, and you're going to be graded on it as though it happened on Thursday. That's the problem here. And I don't really side with the corporations. I'm just saying I can understand that they've seen enough of these things blow up and become financial calamities that it's understandable that they would somehow want to protect themselves. The problem is all these things can be weaponized. And will a publisher use that clause as a flimsy excuse to get rid of a book that maybe doesn't come in and meet their expectations? There are all kinds of problems, but right now it's like we're living in a problem-ridden time because of this whole purity drive that we're going through. And I think we just have to hang in there, and it'll calm down at some point, I hope.
I don't mind hanging in there. I just don't want to be hung out to dry.